You're tuned in to the Roundtable Podcast, Episode 9.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Humphrey.
And I'm Dave Robison.
And you're listening to the Roundtable Podcast.
On the Roundtable Podcast, we invite writers to come onto the show and pitch a story idea to Brian and myself and our esteemed guest host.
And then we dig into it, talking about what works and what doesn't, kick it around, and try to fine-tune it until we get it into a place where we can really do something awesome with it.
Yes, the literary gold phase.
Absolutely.
Awesome. How you been, big guy?
Awesome. I've been great.
I am sore.
Oh, you're sore.
I am sore. I am everywhere. Sore? I am staring 50 in the face, my man. And
no,
it's true. I'm young at heart.
You don't look a day over 49.
Fuck you. But this weekend, it's springtime here in Tennessee, which means I got to get the garden ready. Mm-hmm. So I pulled out our little Honda tiller. And I tilled easily 2,000 square foot of Tennessee clay, molding it, grinding in the lime and the compost,
not a small garden.
No, God, me? No, hell no. We got to have cantaloupe and corn and peas and watermelon and all of that shit. Absolutely.
15-foot-tall sunflowers.
Yes. Oh, the giant gargantuan ones that people think I feed children to. Yes,
that's right. And you probably do.
Dude, can't get that out there. Yeah. In fact, let's just shh about this altogether and move on to the much cooler part of the show where we introduce our guest host, shall we?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Excellent. I'm going to use this word again just because it's so much fun. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to present to you the podcast SF Doyen. as per Cory Doctorow, we are pleased and proud to have Mer Lafferty on the Skype line with us. Mer, thanks for coming back and doing some workshopping with us.
I want to talk about the tall sunflowers. Really, it's like I have a picture of my daughter like against a really, really tall one, and I never thought about it, but you're right. It was looking hungry.
Oh man, I'm telling you, especially when their heads start bowing down.
Oh yeah,
and it's like, I want to suck your face.
Yes.
The original inspiration for Little Shop of Horrors.
I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah, you got it.
Name them all Seymour. Absolutely. but enough about my garden. Let's talk about, let's talk about Mer's garden. But again, the innuendo is flying far too fast and quick for me. Mer, it's been an amazing couple of months for you between the John W. Campbell Award nomination. Congratulations.
Thank you. And yeah, that was a trip, wasn't it?
It's huge. Whoa. My God, it's epic. And now you're going to have to get a dress for Chicago, right?
Man, you too? Seriously. Okay, here's the deal. I have been to 3 Hugo Awards. I knew the first time I went to a Hugo Award that I had to look nice. And I was just in the audience. And then there was the year that I was going to accept for somebody. He didn't win, but still, I knew I had to look nice. The third year, it was just old hat. And now I'm nominated for not a Hugo Award. And people are coming up to me going, you know you got to buy a dress, right? And I'm like, look, I know I wear gaming t-shirts and jeans, but I can clean up good.
Okay.
Trust me.
Okay.
I just, Kiz Johnson, who's nominated for all the awards, came up to me the other day and she's like, you're going to get a really nice ball gown, aren't you?
Oh my God.
You need
ball
one.
Gown?
And I'm like, I don't know if she said ball gown, but again, it was, you got to get a good dress. You know that, right? And I'm like, come on, Kiz, at least you, I would assume, would think that I could handle this. You know me. Oh no.
Now you got to understand that was not an implication of Mer's going to go in a gaming show. I know you can handle this. It's just, you know, having known you exclusively, and I mean exclusively through your voice, having never met you face to face, that is a voice that belongs in a dress, okay? I mean, an awesome, you know, Christian Dior, what the hell ever dress with some discreet, tasteful jewelry and wisps of hair coming down the side of the face. That's all I'm
Seriously?
Saying.
That's what my voice says?
I think you need to make a dress out of the gaming shirt.
No, I have made a dress out of t-shirts before. Awesome. I was MC of the Parsecs 1 year, and I was wearing a ball gown made of t-shirts. They were all black, but yes, I was.
Are there pictures somewhere out there on the interwebs?
There are on Facebook, but unfortunately, I quit Facebook a couple of months ago and then came back, and so those pictures aren't tagged to me anymore.
Oh,
so okay. They're kind of out there on Facebook. Yeah, good.
They'll come back and haunt you in your elder years.
I'm not ashamed of them. I'm just saying that it's the weird thing of leaving Facebook and then coming back. It's like all the stuff that was attached to you. Sometimes that's good, but all the stuff that was attached to you is no longer there. So
it's floating free.
Yes. So yes, there are pictures, but they're not tagged me anymore.
Okay. We'll start the search engines and see what we can dig up. And in addition to the Not a Hugo Award nomination, you've also got great news that Orbit is going to be releasing The Shambling Guide to New York City.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I've got that. Worked on that deal in December and then fretted about it until I could announce in January. And man, that's a sad thing to keep under wraps.
Oh my
especially
God.
Over the holidays.
You
it
must
just
have been
really,
bursting.
Oh, it was awful. Because, you know, it's like, basically they're like, okay, well, we still haven't worked out all as my agent says, all the commas in the contract yet. But basically we did the whole handshake thing of this much money and these are the basic big rights things that we're all going to agree upon in December. And my editor's like, great. Okay. Well, I'm off for 3 weeks. Happy Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Bye. And I'm like, but
don't say a word to anyone.
Exactly. So that was fun. I only realized it like maybe last year that the people who get nominated for awards are told they're nominated long before the announcement. And that's for a variety of reasons. One is so you can decline the nomination, because some people do that. But whenever the awards announcements come out, everyone who is nominated already knows.
Okay.
And they've been dying for 2 to 3 weeks.
What else do you have going on? Is there anything else that the world should know about in the world of Muddy Myrrh?
I've got a lot of stuff in production right now, but I did write some standalone adventures for the Leviathan Chronicles, which is
cool.
a podcast about a
Christoph Laputka.
Christoph Laputka. You know, Christoph doesn't know this, but I usually use Laputka as a swear word. I like to yell Laputka. Christoph doesn't know. I'm hoping he's not listening. But yes, it's Christoph Laputka's brilliant a series about a bunch of immortals who live way, way, way under the ocean in a city called Leviathan City. And he hired me to do a couple of standalone episodes about basically origin stories and backstories of some of the favorite characters. And two of those are out now, and I'm working on a third. So it's always fun. It's really fun to play in somebody else's world.
Well,
although there are a lot of walls, it still feels freeing. I don't know.
Sure, sure. Well, a lot of the boundaries have already been defined, so you get to play in the spaces in between.
Yeah,
that's great fun. Well, and your editor for Angry Robot Books World Builder Project, how's that going?
Oh, that is a lot of fun. I am working on a lot of, I'm getting a lot of pro content on the site and trying to get people interested in submitting their own fan stuff. So if you are into fanfic and you like New York City and Prohibition and alternate realities, I recommend you check it out.
Superheroes
punch a hole in the reality of New York during Prohibition and create the Empire State, which is like a awkward reflection of New York City. So it's a lot of fun. I've got a great story from James Patrick Kelly. I got a song from John Anelio. I got a comic from Cheyenne Wright. It's been just an amazing thing. J.R. Blackwell did a great series of photographs.
Oh, photo stills, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She imagined that they tried to do a movie of Empire State in the 40s. So it's the costuming and the makeup, and she just went all out for this. And it's just a fantastic photo shoot. And they're really just you know, Adam Christopher's world of the Empire State is already very rich and engrossing, but it's like allowing other people to play in it and encouraging professionals to play in it is really bringing it alive.
It's all good. It's all good. And it's going to get better, because what we're going to do now is we're going to break briefly for a little promotion for another outstanding podcast, or perhaps the awesome Parsec promo that you and your bad cop partner put out.
And, that was fun.
Yeah. And when we come back, we'll get our guest writer on here and we'll workshop some stories. Sound good?
Great.
Brian?
Yeah. Oh, I'm still here.
Jeez, no, you're not. You are just sitting there.
I'm laughing.
See, Murr, he always does this. I say, sound good, and this echoing silence stretches and leaves me hanging. So well,
I didn't want to talk over Murr, you know, so I waited and then...
Very polite of you. Very, very fine. Awesome.
I guess I need to stop being polite. I'll You're be more a gentleman. Rude. I'm sorry, Dave.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, wait, that's polite.
Get rude.
Screw you, Dave.
We'll be right back, folks.
All right, Matt, we got a good cop, bad cop question. Parsec Awards wants to know if we will do a promo for them. The Parsec Awards are a celebration of speculative fiction podcasting. Nominations are open April 15th to June 1st. You can find out more at parsecawards.com. And the ceremony is at Dragon Con, which is in Atlanta over Labor Day weekend.
When you were saying all that, what I was hearing was this self-congratulatory waste of time with like us to in turn waste our time promoting it. So
that's a congratulatory waste of time.
It has nothing to do with artistry or working artists or anything productive. It's yeah, no.
Matt, you won at least one Parsec Award. The first one.
I did, and then I won the second year in a row. I won two. It was awesome.
And you're discounting it because you're a hypocrite, or all the good stuff's been done, and or what?
Why can't both be true, Murr?
It's cognitive dissonance, Matt.
You know, don't use big college syllabus words with me. It doesn't work. If I were you, and by that I mean a wannabe instead of an actual trying to be, I would go to parsecawards.com and find out all I can about that, because it sounds really important and worthwhile.
So yeah, if you want to reward your favorite podcast about speculative fiction or featuring speculative fiction, then go to parsecawards.com and learn more about it. And then they can get awards like Matt, and then they can get really big heads, and then they can be complete hypocrites about how much the award matters.
And we are back. Thanks for returning after that awesome bit of promotional goodness. And let's move on gracefully. Let's jeté off to Coolsville and get down to the major mojo of the Roundtable Podcast, which is workshopping a story. And we cannot do that without an awesome guest writer on the show. And dear friends, we've got somebody who's actually already published a couple of works, including a piece in the upcoming, soon to be published any day now, Dead Robot Society Explorers Anthology. He's also a member of the, I'm going to try and get this right, Academia Duellatoria, studying the 1630 rapier fencing manual of Gerald Thibault. Several other credits to his name. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Skype line, Dan Latham. Dan, thanks for stepping up and joining us on the podcast, bud.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. So give us a very brief bio here. Where are you from? What do you do? And how on earth did you catch the insanity of writing?
I live in sunny Medford, Oregon, and by day I'm a caregiver for senior citizens. And by night, as you mentioned, I like to play with swords. I write and make the occasional YouTube video commenting on religion and politics.
Wow.
And how I got started writing, I've always been an avid reader. And in high school, I was encouraged by teachers and my friends until my junior year, when Miss Sinclair, who is the drama teacher, damn her, asked me to be Thisbe in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, my God.
And I caught the acting bug.
Oh, boy.
And that was not a profitable career trajectory.
No. Never is. Never is. And yet, those skills, you use them every day.
Indeed, I do. And so I stopped writing for a while, and I started back again many years later listening to podcasts, okay. Such as I Should Be Writing.
Oh, what a Yay! Coincidence. Mur, I got to ask, let me just jump in real quick. Mur, do you have any acting background at all?
No, I have no acting skill at all and learned that quickly and became a stage manager in my senior year of high school.
Well, but you do vocal acting. I mean, you've read whole stories and books, for crying out loud.
Narrating is a little different.
True.
I have done some audio dramas, but I think I'm asked because of my experience in podcasting and not my incredible skill as an actress. So, you know, it's not. I don't have any illusions.
Okay. All right, that's cool.
Go ahead. I would say that stage managing would really set you up as a writer as well, because we're looking at, you know, from an acting perspective or from a directing perspective, but as a stage manager, you're having to control so many different things that I bet some of that comes across in your
writing. That's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm struck by the number of writers that we've had on the show who have some theatrical background to them. So
right.
I think there's a trend there. There's nothing else, a blog post in there somewhere. So, Dan, you brought a story with you?
Yes, I did.
Outstanding. Let's go ahead and let's hear that story idea. Keep it to 5 to 8 minutes, if you would be so kind.
Sure.
And Mur and Brian and I will shut the heck up and give you the mic, sir. It's all yours.
Very good. The story is titled World Enough for Two. It's a fantasy teenage superhero story. The hook line is, two 13-year-old best friends endure abusive bullies at school. When they acquire the ability to control other people's minds, they learned that with great power comes great payback. This story is about friendship that is stronger than superpowers. It is set in modern-day America as we follow the main characters through high school and into adulthood. The protagonist is Bill, a 13-year-old boy targeted by bullies at his school. Bill is an only child with an idyllic home life, except his parents don't believe how bad the situation at school is. He is supported by his best and only friend, Russell. Like Bill, Russ is also targeted by school bullies. Russell is a frequent guest at Bill's house because his mother is an alcoholic and methamphetamine addict and is sometimes not safe to be around. Like most teenage boys, they like video games, comic books, and daydreaming about girls. They have resigned themselves to the torment because they can't physically fight the bullies, and the adults around them either refuse to believe them or don't see the bullying as a problem. One of the bullies, as a side effect of Bill and Russell's mind powers, gains her own superpower and becomes the boy's nemesis, Thunderstruck. Although the obvious conflict is between the boys and their tormentors, the main story is about their relationship. They became friends because of their shared oppression. Can they remain friends when they no longer need each other for sympathy and mutual support? Now that they have the power to shape their own lives and the world around them, what do they have in common? Can they keep their individual worldviews without conflicting with each other? And then I went into the three-act structure.
Yeah, go for it.
Act one, we are introduced to Bill and Russell and their world. After a night of comic book reading, they observe that they are prime candidates to acquire superpowers. They are horribly abused by their peers, misunderstood by their families, and slightly more intelligent than those around them. Sure enough, they gain superpowers and use their powers to overcome the bullies at school. Russell's ability turns people into his mindless slaves. He quickly forms an opinion that the answer to their problems is through strict control of everyone around them. Bill has the ability to manipulate other people's emotions. He comes to believe that people should be encouraged and guided to lead better lives. They come into violent conflict with each other when Russell attempts to form a zombie army and take over the world. Bill finally convinces Russell that 13-year-olds don't have the life experience necessary to conquer the world. Their friendship dissolves and they go their separate ways. Unbeknownst to them, in that conflict, one of the bully's super abilities is triggered. Act 2, they grow up and fine-tune their abilities. Bill becomes a new age guru. Think Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra. Russell becomes a political advisor. Think Karl Rove. Their nemesis appears and tries to take over the world. Act 3, Bill and Russell must join together to defeat the arch-villain Thunderstruck. They resolve their personal differences and decide to rule the world together in a more subtle fashion. In the final scene, Bill goes to Rome. Shortly after he arrives, Pope Benedict IV announces that Jesus told him there is nothing wrong with birth control and, in fact, is highly encouraged. Russell travels to Jerusalem. Shortly after he arrives, the Israeli Knesset and the Palestinian Parliament decide they love each other as brothers and sisters, and Jews and Muslims will forever after live in mutual peace and mutual respect. The end.
Well done, sir. Well done indeed. And well under time as well, although I think there's going to be a few questions.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Before we get into this, we need to lay out our stock disclaimer. Brian, why don't you go ahead and lay that out if you would?
Okay, yeah. So through the course of this, and we're going to throw out a lot of what ifs and hey, what about this? And absolutely anything and everything that anybody on this podcast throws out is very possibly complete and total shit. So you do not have to use anything that we say. You are under no obligation to give us any credit for any of our ideas. Although if something does come of this, you do need to come back and let us know so that we can, you know, do our dances and
say we rock.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. Yes. So, but for the most part, everything that we're throwing out, you don't have to use any of it. It's, but it's fun for us to kick around.
And it's throwing ideas around the table. So we defer first comments to our esteemed guest host, Murr. Give us your initial impressions of Master Dan's story.
So much pressure.
Oh, this is Katie. Somebody get her a chair.
I'm glad I'm not going first on this one.
Oh, thanks. That's making it even better. I mainly have questions. I have a soft spot for superheroes. I have a soft spot for the underdog. That is very clear. It sounds like you're building up two antagonists. And that might confuse people. It really sounds like you've got two friends who are both bullied and have something in common and are tight. And then when they get their powers seem to be opposed. Like one looks like it's on the white side and one looks like it's on the dark side. But they come together when a new bad guy shows up, and I'm wondering, it's like, I'm thinking like it would be really interesting to see these two guys like go against each other as adults, and that's not happening, and maybe that's just my expectation, but the two antagonists, you've got the, I'm sorry, I mixed up the names, but the one who can control people like zombies sounds like they're on the little, that's not really moral there or ethical or whatever. And then, but then you've got the bully. And so where does the non quite ethical power come into the project? So I guess I'm thinking, if you're going to have two antagonists, it's going to take a little bit of work to make it fit. You can do it, but it's she, right? The second, the bully. Did you say it was a she?
Right, right.
Okay.
The super villain, sure.
Yeah, is she like over, like shadowing them the whole time? Like when they have their conflict, is she going to be overshadowing? Is she going to be there? Because if you bring her in too late in the story, it's going to be like, where the hell did she come from? Oh, right. She was mentioned in chapter 3, but I'm a little disoriented here. So that was the thing that's stuck out at me. I like the setup. I like the, underdogs, the bullying, unfortunately, it happens all too often. I don't know.
No, that's a good start. That's a good
okay,
start.
Okay, that's a good start.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Brian, what you got, bud?
Okay, let's see. All right, so a couple things. First thing is it almost feels like the whole story is leading to the punchline. Like the end is almost, you know, ha-ha, isn't this like picturesque almost. Does that make sense? So I have a very slight concern. It's not a good, like solid, you know, I'm really concerned. It's just a little tiny tweak in the back of my head that's saying, because this is such a far away view of the overall story, I know that the focus is not going to be on everything leading up to a punchline at the end. But that's kind of what came across at first to me. Let me see. I had something else very specific. One of the things that I really liked was in the first section, it's, you know, they're kids and you have them really sort of acting like kids. You know, if I could do mind control, absolutely, I'm going to turn a bunch of 13-year-olds into zombies and try and take over the world. You know, how fun would that be?
Absolutely.
It'd be freaking awesome. So, but then after that first one, when you get into the second one, they're a little bit more adult. They're, you know, here's a common danger. We have to team back up and, you know, put aside our differences and act a little bit more mature. And then at the end, it's almost that wisdom. What can we do to better the world? As opposed to what can we do to just simply take it over. And so I really like that progression.
Yeah.
There was something about was her name Thunderstruck? Is that the bully?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. I would love to see a narrative from her perspective.
Ooh, a little POV
like
shift.
Woven in. Yeah, a little bit of a POV shift. So I don't know if you're doing this from like a third person omniscient kind of a thing, but jumping from one to another, you know, I've read a few books recently where they do that and you it's no secret who the antagonist is or who the bad guy is. It's right away, you know who it is, but then we get to see her development and how she's poisoned, and I think that could make a really fascinating story too, especially since you have Russell, whose mother is an alcoholic and a meth addict. You would almost expect him to become the nemesis because of where he comes from. So if he's able to overcome that, and she has, you know, not necessarily the same background, but maybe there's a similar thing working in her background that is making her a bully or making her, mm-hmm. You know, push people around. It would be really interesting to see how she goes in one direction, he goes in another. They both come from a very similar place. And I think that could be really dynamic.
And let me ask you this, Dan. In Act 3, when Bill and Russell team up to battle Thunderstruck, how do you see that ending? Do you have that ending in mind, or is that something you were hoping we would maybe kick around here during the discussion?
What I was kicking around in my own head was as they mature and fine-tune their powers, they can not only control other people's minds, but manipulate their memories. And they take this this woman who was a bully for reasons, whatever was going on in her own life, I haven't
right.
worked out yet,
yeah.
and just give her happier associations with her childhood.
That's the wrap up? That's the conclusion?
Yeah, that's how they solve the problem with her.
Okay. I like Brian. Brian is always going to glom onto the villain, the nemesis, mm-hmm. and he's absolutely right, because that conflict, that dark mirror of your protagonists, has got to have some kind of mojo there. Although it seems, and the thing I like about this story is that you've got two basic storylines going here. You've got a great buddy story between Bill and Russell, and then you've got the much larger superhero arc. And let me just talk back what I heard from Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3 to make sure I've got it right. Act 1 is they're kids, they get their superpowers, they have that initial rush of power and those initial challenges and problems that come from it. They get angry at each other basically and split up and go their separate ways. In Act Two, they're grown up and we've seen how they've taken their powers and applied them to their own lives. And then in Act Three, we've got the conflict with Thunderstruck. Is that basically it?
Yes.
What else is happening in Act Two? Because Act Two is not going to be just a, this is what Bill did and this is what Russell did. What's the conflict going on there? What's happening in that Act Two? Do you know?
Well, that is a continuation of their different worldviews. Bill, they both, because they can control, have control over other people's minds, can't help but manipulate other people around them.
Sure.
So one tries to use his in a more benign fashion by coming up with new age bullshit.
And, that's harsh, dude. And the other one becomes Karl Rove manipulating political agendas and so on.
Right.
Okay. So, but where's the? I mean, what you've described is a parallel sequence of events and descriptions. Where's the conflict? Where's the character development? Where's the what's at stake and what's stopping them from getting it in that act? Hmm. That's a question, or that's something that we can work out. Right. You know, Murr, do you think is there some way that we could put these two in conflict in some way?
Well, yeah, I think they could easily be in conflict as one controls people externally and one controls people internally. I think the issue I'm having is and damn it, I can't remember the name. I did a lot of superhero research before I wrote Playing for Keeps, and I remember I read one thing about it was like a superhero storyline that addressed why superheroes don't get involved in politics or wars.
Hmm.
Which is basically like some superheroes took out a warlord, but then discovered that and they're like, oh, yay, we saved everybody. And then like the civil war that followed just decimated everything. And, you know, it kind of told people that the real life problems of war and stuff like that are so much more complicated than superheroes. And I really wish I could remember which one that was so I could recommend it, because, like I said, both of these powers are, they edge into the immoral
the dark
area.
Side.
It's like, even if you're doing it for good, you're still controlling somebody. And that's not what we've been taught through all sorts of societal and storytelling ways. Those aren't good qualities to have. And I would like to see these, if you're determined on these characters to have these qualities, I mean, it'd be great to solve these problems so easily. But I don't, it's like, if the Israeli and Palestinian leaders went, hey, awesome, let's shake hands, everyone who follows them going to be like, fuck that. It's like, there's a lot of people you're going to have to control to fix that in a finger snap. I think the conflict here is, man, we got a lot of power and it can fuck a lot of stuff up. Maybe we shouldn't use it. I think the real story here is you've been given this amazing power, should you use it? Because it's not terribly good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it does tend to lead towards very simple solutions. You know, the resolution at the end where the big superhero villain, Thunderstruck, who has been built up for three acts, you know, however many chapters that is, oh, we're just going to tweak her memories and she'll be fine. That's not really satisfying. There's not a lot there to make me go, yeah, awesome. It's like,
now don't let Dave bully you here.
Yes, because then Brian will have to whip out his mind control powers and we'll all be hosed. So
I'll use my safe word.
What?
Yay! Yay!
Funky poo.
Funky food. There's a good safe word. Is there a reason, Dan, why you went with the mind control powers? rather than other powers like super strength or ray beams or whatever?
I think those appeal to me because they're not visually obvious, but what happens is as they start playing around with them, the effects become obvious and everyone in the community starts asking questions. And that's when they realize that they really should tamp it down.
Okay.
And be more discreet.
Well, I think Murr raises a really good point that this, you know, two heroes with mind control powers, which really are walking the line of decency, I'm not sure that it lends itself to a classic superhero arc with classic supervillains. Mm-hmm. Especially if Thunderstruck also has mind control powers.
Yeah, what is her power?
I ripped off Juggernaut from the X-Men.
There's no ripping off. It's okay. No, seriously. It's like, did anyone say the Incredibles were a ripoff? No. And no, don't say ripoff. It's
homage.
It's a power that she's unstoppable.
Yeah, she's invulnerable, and she has a nifty helmet that blocks mental powers.
Okay.
So she's the one person on the planet that they can't just snap their fingers and control.
Okay. And what's she been doing since 12th or 8th grade?
I had her, well, I'm going to need your help on this.
Okay.
But I had her trying to be normal, and she just can't be. And she is really pissed off towards Bill and Russell for turning her into what she sees as a freak.
Okay. Who made the helmet? Who made the helmet?
I think either she did or maybe a romantic interest of hers did.
Okay. Because that's a pretty powerful thing to be able to make a helmet to block if you know that's out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more than an aluminum foil hat.
Yeah. Especially if it's not widely known that mind control powers are out there. So how do you test a device that blocks mind control powers?
Yeah, because I could put on my ball cap and go, hey, no one's controlling me. This works.
Well, and that raises the other question. Where did Bill and Russell get their powers from? Are they mutants? It just kind of happens?
I just figured their logic was right. Okay. That, yep, they're bully. They fit the criteria.
Okay. So now from a backstory standpoint, not that it necessarily needs to come out, how do you see their powers manifesting? Is it just a mutation or gamma rays or chemicals? How do you see that manifesting?
I was thinking it came from something they ingested.
Okay.
They haven't fleshed that part out.
Cafeteria food.
Yes. That is scary stuff.
Well, and there's another question. Is this a serious book or is this a tongue-in-cheek romp?
It is tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, okay.
That
okay.
solves a lot of things.
That definitely does. Yeah. Definitely does.
So one of the things that you said is that they, you know, they're hanging out, they're kind of looking through comic books or whatever and realize, hey, we fit the criteria, right? Is that kind of what you... So maybe there's even something instructive within the comic book. Maybe, you know, I mean, I don't want to say it's like a comic book that you know, fate, we're not going to get into the fate conversation again, but that, you know, that fell into their hands and, you know, there's only one copy of it and it's like, you know, the guide to becoming a superhero or anything. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, then they're looking at this and, oh, look, these superheroes came from the same basic backgrounds that we did and... maybe something in that helps them kind of awaken this thing that if other people just realized that they fit this particular criteria, that maybe they could have it too. I don't know. You know, there's something
kind of cool.
There's something in that, I think.
There is, absolutely. Now, Murr, I need to caution you right now. This, we're getting into the what if section. And right. Brian and I tend to get very, very excited. So
yes.
get out the big stick. And anytime you've got something to throw in, just jump right on in. Just do it.
Okay.
So Okay.
Yeah.
So, because otherwise we'll just froth and twitch, and it's not always fun.
I guess with the what if, I'll go on the, have you ever heard the, I believe it's John Hodgman on This American Life discussing flight versus invisibility?
No.
Okay. No. Well, it's a really interesting discussion of, he basically went around and talked to a whole bunch of people. If you could have flight or if you could have invisibility, which would you choose? Mm-hmm. And he kind of developed that. I'm sorry to harp on this, but it's really getting to me now. But basically, invisibility is sneaky. It's when you sneak into the shower. It's when you sneak into somebody's house. It's not the good. It's not the heroic power.
Right.
And I think really you've got potential here. You've got huge potential because you're giving your protagonists invisibility, essentially, mm-hmm. and you're giving them the power that's sneaky and the power that's not so good. And yeah, the bully is interesting, but I really think you're seeing you're leaving an untapped potential mine over here on the left of, you've got these two people who are your heroes and they get these powers that aren't terribly ethical. And what do they do with them? And, you know, maybe they, I think they could defeat the bully in the first quarter or the first third of the book, and then see where they grow after that, because it's like, she's not terribly interesting to me. I'm sorry to say it harshly, but
she's not a good foible. She's not a good, she's not a good nemesis.
I really see the guys as playing off each other.
Yeah. But I think that in their discovery of, you know, here we have these cool powers, let's use them, and then the realization, at least for one of them, to realize that, wait a minute, maybe this isn't okay, and what we're doing is wrong, and the other one, no, it's great, let me, you know, raise a zombie army. Through all of this, the person who gets hurt the most, whose friends get turned away from her, unbeknownst to her, is the one who becomes this nemesis. So then she's got a dog in the fight, and she has a reason to hate them to at every turn. And it's not necessarily anything that is directly visited on her.
What do you got, Mer?
Mm-hmm. Oh! I like this. I like this train, but I'm going to turn it to another track. You've got it's like they were tormented. They got their powers. But let's say the bully's out of the picture for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Parents move her away. Happens all the time. But then they're like, powers for good. Let's fuck up the bully. Bullies grow up. Bullies, a barista at the local coffee shop, and she's pregnant, and she's unmarried, and she's a little unsure what's going on. And then these guys come up and start fucking up her life. And it's like, whoa, wait. Is she still evil? Are they doing the right thing? Are they getting their revenge? Is it a good idea? I mean, what if you make the bully a huge threat to begin with, but then they grow up and they still have their grudges, as many of us do, but she's moved on.
Boom.
Right.
I like it. And you know, Dan, you don't necessarily have to limit it. I mean, definitely Bill and Russell are the primary protagonists.
Right.
But if we go with Brian's idea of we've got a comic book that makes superheroes, you could have other friends, a circle of friends, acquaintances, other geeks and nerds and outcasts who are bullied and create I don't want to say a super team, but create a support group, an environment in which these dramas that Bill and Russell are contending with can play out in. And it'll also allow you to bring in additional perspectives of their powers and how they're using them and the arguments that come up along the way.
Okay.
So what, and with Mer's angle on it, and I think when you first pitched this idea, I think Mer's really found a thread there, and Brian as well, that the real drama of the story you're telling is between Bill and Russell.
Yeah. Right.
Not necessarily with Thunderstruck and with the with that. Now, if they are careless in their execution of their powers, which they will be because they're kids, someone is going to twig to this. Someone is going to be aware of it. Someone might steal the How to Make a Superhero book. Someone who isn't troubled by moral and ethical issues.
Mm-hmm. Or the original author of it.
Ooh. Ooh.
The person who wrote it, who imbued it with some kind of power.
Maybe, yeah.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. Oh, man. So the book gets stolen, and now we have real supervillains out there.
Wait. I'm who riffing. Stole the book? What if she stole the book and they stole the book from her?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Which is how they all got the powers and all feel a little antagonistic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What I
and
was
that, and that would lend to their powers being the invisible versus the flying, if it was written by somebody who was a bit nefarious.
Sure.
In the first place, you know. So rather than here's this book that it'll give me any power I want, it's you know, it's a pretty dark. It's almost Necronomicon, and anything that comes from it is going to be
the superhero Necronomicon. Holy crap!
I don't think it's been done.
I don't think so either.
No.
I think it's awesome. What I was going with the book gets stolen from them, you know, maybe by the bully or whatever, was to necessitate a quest on their part after the bad things start happening to go and seek out the creator. That's their only recourse now, because they used the book. They got these dubious powers. Bill and Russell, in a fit of moral wisdom, lock it away so that their friends aren't tainted by it as well. I don't know, that might be weak, but they for whatever reason they tuck it away. They have their revenge. The bully is tormented by this. The bully's sharp, wiser, sees that something weird is going on, follows them around, maybe discovers, oh, they got this thing that they talk about. She steals it. Now, I know we're kind of moving away from the bully just moving on and getting on with it, or whatever. She doesn't have to steal. Somebody does. But then they have to go and seek out the dark master of the Necronomicon of superheroes, which is a classic quest arc that could lead to all sorts of wonderful revelations about human nature, about power, and all of that.
Another thing that I think would be interesting is along the way, you kind of already have Russell going off in the wrong direction at first. Mm-hmm. And so while they're struggling with the ethics of, you know, controlling people and changing their memories and all of these different things, if Bill is continuously cleaning up the mess and chasing after Russell and, you know, trying to fix whatever he fucks up by messing with people, then that creates a little tension between them as well, just as another layer to it, I think.
Yeah, Murr, what do you see some of the character arcs and conflicts between Bill and Russell? How would you exacerbate and escalate that relationship?
I kind of see them doing the both having their ideas. Suddenly what springs to mind is like watching the primaries within a party. It's like you're all trying to say the same things, but you want to be just a little bit different. Like Bill does one thing that he thinks is good, but Russell disagrees. And so he manipulates reality to fit what he wants to do. But then it's a back and forth. Like, yeah, we're both working toward the same thing, but we both want to go our different ways. And I think it could get like once they each have one or two turns. I mean, what if their fingers in other people's minds leaves something, leaves some sort of residue.
Sure.
So it's like, yeah, you can push somebody in one direction and that's fine. But like you push them emotionally and the other guy pushes them zombie-like and then you push them back and then there's just, you mess them up. Yeah. And suddenly it's like, you broke the guy. No, you broke the guy. I'm trying to do something good. No, you broke the guy. And I see them both trying to do the right thing, but messing it up big time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Now,
Dan, are they able to manipulate each other?
Ooh.
No.
Did they get the helmet from Thunderstruck? Did she make helmets to give out?
No, the rules I gave them was that when one of them tries to enter the other's mind, they know it.
Okay.
Because that's too close to their ability.
They have heightened awareness. They have the ability to defend against those intrusions.
So if Russell tries to shut down Bill, Bill can quickly drag up a memory of his mother's boyfriend beating him.
Right. Because what I was thinking is you could have either a really epic, dramatic thing where they get into a battle between each other, or it could be horribly, horribly comical. You know, just sort of a, I'm going to give you a memory of you walking out in front of the school with no clothes on, or, you know, and then them being horrified that they have, oh my God, that actually, oh shit, it's you, you son of a, you know, and just sort of this back and forth. And so I don't know if you would, you know, want to go there, but.
Oh God. And if they fall in love with the same girl.
Right.
That's,
but then that's kind of getting into that new movie with the two spies.
Yeah. Or, forget it. You know. Forget it.
But again, you know, an amateur imitates and a mature artist steals. So go for
Well said, sir. Well said. But I mean, romance is certainly going to be a factor in this story at some point, as both of these adolescents mature, and start evolving. I mean, there's the whole issue of, you know, God, that I want to go out with that girl, so I'm going to mind control her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, that's fun. Well, yeah, exactly. It is. Yeah. It's totally. It's very icky. And just as icky, the emotional guy making her feel all light and fluffy and fluttery when he's around, trying to create almost an emotional dependency on him. Oh my God! See, this whole this mind control thing is dark, man.
Yeah,
it is.
This is not a romp. Yeah. This is
which is brilliant for characters that are supposed to be your protagonist, because you know how they deal with that and what they do with it is probably 90% of your story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole feeling of it's like once you're realizing what you have is really fun and powerful and really, really unethical and mm-hmm. coming to terms with the fact that you should not use it it's a big character step. But then here comes a supervillain. Is it the creator of the comic book? Is it Thunderstruck? You know, that's up in the air. But suddenly someone comes onto terms and you have to realize, do you use that power you've sworn not to use? Because, you know, it's not terribly a good thing. Mm-hmm. Has there been any talk of the... I've been really interested in some of Japanese storytelling, especially Miyazaki. I don't know if you guys have seen a whole lot of Miyazaki, but there's a lot of... introducing a villain, and by the end of Act 2, the villain is completely not even on their side, but completely powerless. Like they completely castrate the villain,
okay.
And then the villain's just kind of hanging out. And no, I'm not saying do that completely, but there is the interesting story of introduce a villain. And then by the middle of the story, the villain's gone, either gone or shut down or beaten. And then you realize who the big villain is. And maybe the previous villain will help you out with the big villain. It's a like a, okay. You know, your former antagonist becomes your ally kind of thing.
Sure. So if the boys stole the book initially, let's say, and the bully who becomes Thunderstruck or whatever is approached by the creator of the book to go steal it because he likes minions. I don't know.
Who doesn't really?
Exactly. We all wish we had more. And as a reward, you know, bestows upon her a dark gift that she can exact her revenge against him, blah, blah, blah. And counsels her to lay low and wait until they are men and then take them down. And then, as Mer says, you know, in Act 2 or at the beginning of Act 2, you know, have Thunderstruck arise and the boys bring her down. And then they realize, holy crap, where's the book? the book has been returned to the Dark Master. Holy crap, we got to get that thing back. And then, yeah, we can, you know, she knows the Dark Master. She can has enough clues, at least, mm-hmm. that between her power and the boy's mind control power, you know, you can manipulate events that lead them to this epic fight. And now, you've almost, we're back to kind of a superhero arc again, where this guy has been using his how to create Necronomicon super villain book, and they have to fight an army of evil dudes with superpowers. I don't know. But that I'm looking for in this is an arc. What we've been talking about are these individual themes between the characters is spot on and solid gold. But I'm also looking for what's the big story arc? Where do we go from beginning to end to get to that? Yes, okay, that's a satisfying conclusion.
And wow.
there you go.
This could all be bullshit.
This could all be complete bullshit. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll sift through the bullshit to find the gold.
There you go. Let me ask you this, Dan. Was there anything in particular that you wanted to ask Murr or that you wanted to get out of this discussion?
Oh, no, I was going to say at the beginning of the show, I had, you know, the beginning in mind and I had the end in mind. It was that messy middle bit. And yeah. You guys really gave me a lot to work with.
Yes. Excellent. We like to make sure we leave you with a big bag of literary gold to leave with so you can chip and mold and shape it into gloriousness.
Yes.
Excellent. Awesome. Dan, we always exact a vow, as Brian implied at the beginning, that when this book is drafted and written and as soars into the bookstores and you achieve exalted fame and glory, that you let us know. So that we can plaster your name on the success stories link that someday we will have on the Roundtable podcast. Will you do that for us?
I give you my solemn vow.
Awesome. And it's on recording, so we have him.
But really, you should put us all in the acknowledgments.
Absolutely.
Oh, we absolutely will.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And you know, Hugo nomination, Hugo acceptance speeches, we need to be featured in there somewhere.
That's right. That's right. And number one on the list before agent, ideas? Before editor, before spouse. Totally.
Yeah. First and foremost.
And any ideas that were ours need to be in italics within the book. So we can find them quickly.
In fact, tell your publisher to write it in gold ink just That's so right. it's very clear.
That's right.
Yeah. See, I think we've all become supervillains in our own particular way at this point. Dan, excellent job, my friend. That's I think we can't have this much fun with a story if there's not something to work with. So you've really crafted an excellent foundation. I hope we've been able to give you some good stuff to chew on in the days to come.
Certainly.
Excellent. Murr, any last words for Master Dan? Words of advice or counsel, wisdom, suggestions, lattes?
Keep writing. It's take all criticism with the grain of salt of it's just trying to make you better and it's not trying to bring you down. And so our suggestions are you created something with an awesome premise and we gave advice and yes. take it in the realm of, you know, this we're just trying to help out and make it better, not tear you down. I've just seen too many people freak out at critiques. So that's what I got to say.
Yes, absolutely. This is very much meant in the spirit of fun and creativity, not criticism and control. Absolutely.
Right.
Bri, how about you, my man?
Very, very cool story, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you do with it. And, you know, run with it. And if you don't use anything that was said here, awesome. If you use anything that was said here, awesome. But, you know, at the very least, let it spark whatever it's going to spark and you know, make it yours and run with it. And I'm excited to see what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Brian.
You've taken an established trope, the superhero genre, and you've found a unique expression for it and a really strong environment to explore all sorts of fabulous issues like control and power and friendship. And I keep going back to your tagline and your theme about how friendship is stronger than superpowers. And I think that's solid gold and a strong foundation to build on.
Yeah. And hold on to that. Don't lose that, because that I think is really where your story's at.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Another thing that I wanted to point out is that I really like how you start out almost as a YA and then they get older.
Yes.
And they become more mature. And so you're going to reach a super broad audience with that, because you'll have people who, you know, kids who look at this and go, oh yeah, that's totally me. I'm the smart kid in class everybody makes fun of, but I know what I'm talking about. And, you know, maybe I'm going to find this comic book or whatever, however you go with it. Uh-huh. And so you'll appeal to them. You'll appeal to, you know, the older YA kids, well, and you'll appeal to the adult crowds.
The grown-ups will see themselves in the kids and project into that and follow it all the way through. Absolutely. Yeah. All kinds of gloriosity. Outstanding.
I love the new words.
I'm Mr. Malaprop over here. Mighty Mer Lafferty, I cannot tell you what a pleasure it has been to share some mic time and to do a little brainstorming and workshopping with you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to share some time here at the Roundtable.
It's been a ton of fun. Thank you guys for having me on.
Absolutely.
I would like to second that 100%.
Totally. And I'm betting there's a third from Dan.
Mer, I know you're pulled in a dozen different directions, and I really, really appreciate your taking the time for this.
Of course, it was fun. Yes. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, my friends, I think that's going to wrap up this episode of the Roundtable Podcast. One for the books, definitely. I want to thank our guest host, Mer Lafferty, our guest writer, Dan Lantham. I got Lantham on the head. Where'd that come from? I've been reading too much J. Daniel Sawyer books, I guess. Dan Lantham, my ever-charming co-host, Brian Humphrey.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And especially I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Whether you tuned in right when it dropped or it's been 2 years since we recorded this and you're just now listening to it, I hope you guys had as much fun as we did. If you're so inclined, drop a review out at iTunes. Drop us a comment on our website, www.roundtablepodcast.com. Leave a comment. If you have some ideas for Dan's story, you know, there's a comment section right underneath the post. Go ahead and toss that out there. We'll let Dan know your comments up there, and we can continue the discussion offline. So, Brian, anything else before we wrap this bad boy up?
No, I think you've said it all. All I can say is get your butt in the seat and go right.
Go right. Absolutely. Ideas are cheap. Turn them into stories and then bring them onto the round table. We'll turn it into gold for you. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.